Before the rush takes over, start your Christmas journey with Premier's Advent Moments interactive calendar. Open each door and step into the unfolding story of Jesus with daily challenges rooted in kindness and a verse that brings you closer to Bethlehem. You'll also receive short emails of encouragement to help you stay centered through Advent. Sign up at premier.org.uk/advent2025. Brought to you by Sat7 UK.
No, I don't like that glossing over thing because it's not the reality, and that's not faith to me. That's pretend. That's quite strong, but that's how I feel.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Well, Charlie Webster, thank you so much for joining us on The Profile. It is an absolute delight to chat to you on very early in the morning. And I know you're on a bit of jet lag and all different time zones. So thank you so much for giving us a piece of your time. And we're going to start today's podcast. I'm just going to ask you the question that I ask all our guests when we get cracking. And that is, could you tell us a little bit about your own faith journey?
Yeah, but have we got several days? No, I'm joking. But thank you so much for having me on. It's a real pleasure speaking to you. And I appreciate your patience as well, because you're right, I have been in many different time zones that I can't even keep track of myself. I have like all these different things on my phone where it's like, and I'm now like an expert in like nearly every time zone. It's ridiculous. My own faith journey is, I joke saying, have you got several days? But it's kind of not a joke, because it's not a complicated one, but it's a long one, I suppose, because I was, so I think first and foremost, it's important to set out that I was not raised in a religious Christian, any kind of religious household. In fact, it was quite the opposite. It was almost like anti-religion. In fact, it was anti-religion or anti-faith and anti-God. So even when I was a teenager, my stepdad wouldn't let me go to a after school club. What did you used to call them back in the day? You know, like a youth club.
Yeah,
a youth club. because it was in a church and it had a faith element. So yeah, just to give you an idea of my background. And so then as I got, but when I was younger, I always felt like I used to pray to God, but isn't that funny? Because I had no influence. And I often like question that myself. I'm like, where, you know, obviously maybe it clearly did come from God, but like, you know, where did that come from if I didn't have that influence on the outside? And I think it was probably because my background was very difficult. My home life was difficult. So I used to, you know, pray to God and, you know, for things to change or for my mum to be okay. And so when you ask that question of where my faith journey started, I could say, you know, in my 30s, which I'll come to in a minute, but maybe it didn't. Maybe it did start when I was younger, because I felt connected in some way, not necessarily to the Bible or to Jesus, but definitely to my own, the Holy Spirit inside me, and my own belief that in myself and in God, to be able to live my life differently and to change things and to have impact. And then the second place my faith journey started was actually in my early 30s, when I walked into a church roughly for the first time. So I had been to a church once in a while for a wedding, or, you know, I don't know, for some kind of event, but I'd never really been to a service. And I was really uncomfortable and I didn't like it at all. And I feel like, you see, I told you I can take the whole hour up with this story. So I'll try and do it in short. And I just felt really uncomfortable. And there was a lot of people around me singing and really quite joyous. And I felt the opposite. And I felt like I couldn't sing remotely, and I love singing and I love music, and I was like my face probably looked so unapproachable, which is not who I am as a person either. Like, I'm very approachable, and you can see that in my job, but I was just like, what is this? But I was going through a difficult time, and I'd heard about this church. It's Holy Trinity Brompton in London, through some friends that are Christian and do have a deep faith, but we never talked about it. It was almost like a separation. So they didn't talk about it with me. They go and did their stuff and I did my stuff when it came to faith, right? Anyway, walked into that church and they started talking about Alpha. So I ended up being curious. I'm a very curious person. I'm a journalist and kind of intrigued. And then I realized that maybe my faith journey didn't start there, because I used to live in Southeast Asia when I was in my 20s, and I was always going to churches, to temples. I went to ceremonies to do with Buddhism, to do with Hindu. So I actually think I was always really intrigued across the board, right? And so then I started to go to that church a couple of times, never sang, never spoke to anyone, just randomly popped in sometimes on a Sunday night. And the fact that it was in the nighttime, I really liked. I never went to the morning. And then a friend of mine, sadly, we don't actually speak anymore, said, why don't you go to Alpha? I'll come with you. And so I was like, yeah, okay. And I liked it for the intellectual side of it. Because if you haven't heard of Alpha, which I'm sure a lot of people have, I think you can go no matter what religion you are or what denomination, or actually if you aren't religious in the slightest or have faith. And it's great because you get to have debate, you get to meet people and you get to question things, which I love. That's my job. And so I really enjoyed Alpha. And then I realized that when I was going through, the Bible basically, and we were going through different scripture and what it means, that I felt so connected with it already. I felt like I'd already read it. I already knew it. It's what I live by. And then I remember going away and one of the pastors gave me a Bible and it was a teenage Bible. And I was like, I'm going to read this. But again, this is my personality. I'm like quite a perfectionist and quite studious. So I went away and read the entire teenage Bible, and it was a purple teenage Bible. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And I felt like so connected with it. And then the reason why I'm telling this detail is because it's really powerful story. So then that probably finished around June of 2016. This is how recent this is. Like, that was when I was like in my early 30s. And I then went, which some people might know, and did this charity cycle ride. And I cycled from London to Rio. And I ended up in a coma and on life support machine and was given 24 hours to live. And a woman, just before I went in the coma, and my mum was told that I was dying and she had to get on a plane to see me ASAP, and it was horrific. And this woman just sat there by my bed and was connected to the church in London, in Brazil. By the way, I was in a coma in Brazil. And she was pregnant, and I remember thinking, like, what are you doing here? Because, like, I was in a really bad way. I was hooked up to lots of machines, and they told me I was dying, and they didn't know what was wrong with me. And all I kept thinking is, why are you taking this risk, sat next to me? But I could hardly speak at that time, and I was so distressed. And it was, and she'd got the connection to do with the church that I'd stepped into earlier that year. And then I ended up nearly losing my life. And I know that people prayed all over the world for me, led by that church that I'd started going to just earlier that year and taken Alpha. People prayed for me in Australia, in the UK, in America, and you know, I'm here now. So to me, it's been such a powerful journey, and that's a powerful story, because I feel like I was meant to step in that church earlier that year to have that community, and that community ended up helping me after just recover. And I spent a lot of time in that church just trying to understand what had happened to me, because obviously I did recover because I'm talking to you. But then a lot of stuff happened in my family. And then my mum ended up divorcing her abusive husband, and she ended up coming to stay with me, and she went to that church and they helped her. So it became this, like, it's just such a powerful story. And I know I gave you a very long answer, but I think just telling that detail just shows, I would wonder what you think about the story I've just told you, because it's, I don't know, I think a powerful, to me, it really means a lot, because I feel like everybody's prayer and my connection with myself through faith saved my life.
Wow. I think it's an amazing story. And what a beautiful picture of how God just puts the things and the people in place that you're going to need ahead of time. And I mean, we could have 15 conversations off the back of that one story. Like, there are so many things I want to
know.
I feel like
I wouldn't do it justice if I told a quick answer of my
absolutely
faith
not no it's a beautiful story, and it's really fascinating to me because in some ways my story actually is really similar. I became a Christian when I was about, well, the first time I went to church I was 8 years old, with brownies, and again, I'm from a completely non-Christian household. You would no faith in my family whatsoever. My dad, in fact, was incredibly anti-God. And I would say, like you, that even before I had the words to really tell you what a faith in God was or a relationship with Jesus was, I knew that I believed God was real and there was some kind of childlike connection to something that I couldn't quite put a handle on. I became a Christian a bit earlier. I was about 13. And it was 3 weeks before my dad left our family for the first time. My dad is a world champion power lifter and he became addicted to steroids and cocaine. And we have I could tell you an hour long story. But what's interesting to me in similar ways to you, someone asked me when I was about 18, when I was sharing my story, didn't you think it was really weird that you became a Christian, then all these terrible things happened? And I didn't really know how to answer them at the time, but it's something I've spent a long time thinking about since. And listening to your story, that immediate thought comes back, like, oh, isn't it crazy, like you walked into HDB, you gave your life to Jesus, and then you nearly died. And like, lots of people might say, well, that's stupid, like, how can you believe in a good God when like this happened? But actually for me, I kind of think it's the reverse. I'm like, God knew what was going to happen and he put into place this beautiful mechanism that not only supported you but then reached out to envelop your family as well. And I just think that's such a beautiful description of the goodness of God in the widest possible sense, and the beauty of the family of Christ as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because, yeah, I think that's a very common argument, right? If argument's maybe the wrong word, but like, oh, well, then if there is a God, why do these bad things happen? And look, my life was very difficult before that happens. I mean, I've had an amazing life, but so I don't want it to be like, oh, it was so difficult. But I was raised in abuse. I was brought up in abuse and I was abused as a child and as a teenager, emotionally, physically and sexually, and had, you know, a consequence of that, a lot of trauma and mental health issues. And so for me, I feel like I took a lot of strength from really believing that I was worthy and went on that path. And also that somewhere inside me, that my voice was valuable and my voice could make change. And I feel like a lot of that was driven with discovering my connection with God. But I don't believe, and you know, it's hard to reconcile. It's like, I don't always have an answer. I'm like, oh my God, I really did not, like, you know, me being, you know, nearly dying. And that was, I can't even describe how distressing that was and how distressing it was on my family. And also the journey that I've had to go on to recover from that. But at the same time, I don't believe that God, I believe that we make our own choices, right? And I believe that God, I don't believe in, you know, there's this whole thing where it's like, oh, well, God would have prevented that. And it's like, well, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't need to go through that. So yeah, God, you could have maybe stopped that. But I don't believe that's God's role in my life. Or, you know, so I believe that, yes, God helped me survive that. And also there was, from that, I did go on a journey to not just kind of like connect more with faith or become one in that way, but also just deal with some of the things that were maybe unhealthy in my own life and some of my own patterns of behavior that were unhealthy. And it helped me see that. So I don't know, it's an interesting point you made, because I'm not going to sit here and go, oh yeah, but that's just, you know, I'm not going to argue either way. But at the same time, I believe we as humans do have choice. And so I believe God gives us you know, the courage, the strength, the love, and helps us connect to be able to make those choices and also to give us strength to survive. Like, we're incredible as humans. And I don't believe that life was meant to be this rosy thing. And that God just creates that, right? Because then I don't like believing that, because I like to believe that I do have choice and that I can change life, my life, and I can be empowered to do that. And then it's about my connection with God that helps inform my decisions, right?
Mm.
Did that make sense?
What yes, I just said? 100%. Yeah.
So, to me, it's like God gave us. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But also, like, God gave us those choices, and a lot of the, you know, obviously I didn't choose to be in that situation, you know, but it did happen. Yeah, yeah, it was an interesting point you made. You've got me like going on a tangent in my head.
You alluded to some of the harder things that have happened in your life. Would you be willing to just talk to us a little bit more about what you went through as a child and as a young adult?
Yeah, I was raised in a domestic abuse household. Yeah, I was abused as a child in that environment, and in every way. And I think just to describe like what that was like, it you know, you're just walking on eggshells every day, being scared. You know, you wake up in the morning and you listen to any sound, which helps inform where people are in the house or what might happen that day. So I became like very alert as a kid, very hyper vigilant, could always tell in any environment of any danger, which is super unhealthy as a child. And, you know, it became all about managing the environment to try and limit the emotional, verbal and physical violence that we suffered. And, you know, it's really sad because it has such a, I'm talking about it as if it didn't happen to me, but it's really sad in terms of like, it just is, it's just like, I feel so strongly, and I've campaigned so much about this because it has such a long-term impact, and I don't think people understand. Mm-hmm. You don't just become an adult and you're like, oh, okay, now I'm safe and now I'm in control of my own decisions. Mm-hmm. It's like, the way I was raised is like, that was my world and I didn't know anything else. So that informed how I saw myself. So I've had to do so much work on that. I saw myself as not worthy, clearly not lovable, because how could I be lovable? Because look, this is the way I'm treated. And also like my mom, who is incredible, like she's incredible what she survived, but because she was a victim of domestic abuse, she was not always present mentally and emotionally to be a mom, right? So that was also difficult because, I very much parented myself. And then when I was a teenager, or when I was 11, I joined a running group, and 11 going on 12, and I just loved it so much. It became like my community, my family, my home, outside of the home. And like laughed probably for one of the few times that I laughed. And you know, I can't just even picture it now, you know. And I loved it. It just, I felt like I could connect with myself. It helped me take out a lot of the emotion I was feeling, and I was good at it. And I was like, whoa. But then sadly, my running coach took advantage of that and groomed and sexually abused me as a teenager and a lot of the other group too. It wasn't just me. That again was just like, again, there's so many things that you can pull out of that, because it just shows you how, you know, he used my own vulnerability and own trauma as a child against me to then, you know, abuse me, because I already had a low self-worth. But I really trusted him, and, you know, he spent years grooming me before he physically did anything, and I felt safe with him, and I really believed that he cared. And also what's difficult about that situation is, and what's confusing is, that because it was done in the guise of like sport and running, it was like, well, this will make you better. And to me, I wanted to be better because I wanted to be the best, because if I could be the best, then maybe I was worthy and maybe then I'd be lovable. And it was all very conditional for me. That's what I felt. Love was conditional. But if I could win races, then maybe things would change. And then maybe I could change my environment. So it hooked on so much. It wasn't just like a passion. It was like, I wanted to be an Olympian. I wanted to use this as a vehicle to save my mum, to change out, you know. So there was so much hooked into it. And so it was absolutely devastating. My coach did get convicted and did get put in prison when I was about 19 years old. But it absolutely destroyed me, because the thing that was my safety became another danger.
Hi, it's Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity magazine. I'm proud to say we are celebrating our 60th anniversary. From our beginnings as Buzz in the 1960s to the vibrant multi-platform magazine we are today, our commitment to connecting faith with the world around us has never changed. To mark the occasion, we have a special offer of 12 months for half price. That's just £24 for print and digital access. Subscribe today at premierchristianity.com. Automatically renews at £47.99.
Okay, so tell me how that impacted, I mean, your career now. If you look at it on paper, it's phenomenal. Like, you have
achieved
unbelievable things, from being the first female anchor on a world heavyweight boxing title fight to commentating on what would have been, you know, let's face it, 15 odd years ago, really, like, it's interesting to me. I have two teenage girls. They see so much less prejudice than I have seen and experienced in my life. And you know, they see the Roses winning the World Cup rugby. They see the Lionesses winning tournaments. They see this equality in sport, which, you know, when I was at school didn't exist. And I'd be interested to hear your perspective on how you broke through into that space, you know, a reasonable amount of time ago, and how it compares to now. Have you seen change, and how was it for you trying to get into those arenas?
It's changed exponentially. And there's still attitudes need to change, but the actual, like, attitudes need to change still. So I'm not saying, oh yeah, it's fine now, because there's still, like, you know, pay gaps, and there's still, like, sexist abuse, which I do see, but it's changed so much, and it will keep changing. And I think we have to remember that history does take time to change. And historically, women didn't really do sport. So it's a very new thing still. So I think it's like, we're doing incredible. I think that's really important to remember, because I'm sat here and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I'm not that old, but things have changed so much. So it's like, oh my gosh. And I'm so, I remember I used to think I don't belong in this industry because I'm from very underprivileged background, no money, no contacts, you know, like, I'm the first person in my family to go to university, to get educated. My mom, incredible. I'm so proud of her. She had me as a teenager. Life was difficult and I had nothing. And so I used to think, oh, I don't belong in the industry because it was all people with privilege, right? But then that, I realized, became my superpower, because now I tell, like, I've really built this incredible career for myself, where I can also tell stories which have impact, right? And that comes from being able to understand what trauma is like, to understand what pain is like, to understand adversity. And so it's now become my superpower, because I can really see things from, not just from a journalistic point of view, but from a lived experience and an emotional point of view, and I can hold space for people. But then the second thing was, I was like, I was born, like, too early. I used to be like, I was born too early. I wish I was, like, that age now. So yeah. I was working in this now, because, but at the same time, I don't. So sometimes, yeah, I was like, I was born, like, I was too ahead of my time. But actually, like, how incredible that I was ahead of my time. And in some way, I paved that path. Nobody had walked that path before me. And how incredible that now I sit there and I'm so proud. I sit there quietly and I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember that person who, you know, who came along in there and they were so young and they like made a cup of tea and they're now like absolutely smashing it and you know, I don't know, hosting the rugby, presenting the rugby and like, and these were young girls at the time that saw me go and do something like that. Like, how amazing is that? Like, so for me, I'm like, whoa, I helped pave that path. And, but let me tell you, it was so hard. Like, it was so difficult because sport wasn't a pathway as a woman. Well, as a girl, because I was a young girl, no way was it a pathway. Obviously, I've told you that I, you know, wanted to be an athlete and I wanted to be an Olympian. But there was not really a profession there and you couldn't really see. I mean, Kelly Holmes, I remember watching her in the Olympics and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to be Kelly Holmes. But there wasn't like, you couldn't go and play football. And I loved football. You couldn't go and play rugby as a girl. And there was no pathway in broadcast. There was no pathway either. I just literally bought my way in and knocked down every door. And I was treated horribly the majority of the time. Yes. And I worked with all men. Not every man treated me horrible. There was very few women, and a couple of the women that were in high positions were horrifically awful, which is really sad. And so I check myself every day that I'm not that person. I check myself every day, you know, and I'm not. I know I'm not because I check myself every day. So that person doesn't. But that's how conscious I am of it because, yeah, some of the women in those positions were also bullies. But yeah, like, oh my gosh, I could tell you so many stories. And, I remember you mentioned boxing, right? So I've done like all sorts, like tennis, Olympics. I started in sport, you know, World Cups, you name it, I've done, and boxing. And I remember saying to, the head of a network at the time, like I've trained in boxing. I trained in boxing when I was a teenager. So I started training boxing as a teenager, right? I was about 14 or 15 when I started boxing. And that helped me so much too. And it helped improve my running. And then I did Muay Thai, which is like kickboxing. And so I had a real depth in it. I loved boxing as a kid too. And I was raised in that. There was a lot of boxing talk in my household. And my stepdad did box too. And so I had a lot of influence in it. And I loved it so much. And I knew a lot about it. I actually also competed in boxing. So just to give you the background. So I wasn't just going, oh, I fancy a bit of this. Like I had a really depth of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was like one of the main anchors, one of the main presenters on Sky. And so I remember saying like, I'd really like to, you know, join the boxing team as well. And they were like, like it, I almost got laughed at and it, I got laughed at basically. It's like, you know, a woman's not going to get involved in boxing. Like, you know, the audience is not ready for a woman to talk about boxing. Ha ha ha. Like, and I was like, okay. And that's like giving, you know, putting a red rag to a bull with me. the conversation was, I edited the conversation a bit there. Yeah, the conversation was quite strong actually. And more derogatory than that. But basically, yes. A woman can't speak about boxing and a woman can't box. Bear in mind, this was before women were even allowed to box in the Olympics. So this is like in 2012 was the first time women were allowed to box in the Olympics. That is crazy. That's not even that long ago. So that's how much things have changed, which is incredible. And I remember being like, okay. I'm going to show you. Yeah. And I went on a mission to basically prove him wrong. And I really appreciate the boxing community because like when I did get an opportunity, which actually was through when it was announced women were allowed to box in the 2012 Olympics, I went back and I said, women are allowed to box in the 2012 Olympics. What about if I do some reporting on it? And, you know, I know some of these people because they've been around the gyms that I've been around. And so that's how I managed to get into it. Because then how could they deny that? Because if a woman's allowed to step in a ring, why can't a woman talk about it? And that's how I managed to do it. And I have to say thank you to the boxing community. And they really realized I knew what I was talking about and I loved it. And so I have to say that I was welcomed in that space. But yeah, I could tell you a million stories where I've been like, oh, you know, do you actually know about sport? Oh, what? Because like, I'm a woman. No, clearly I don't. Of course I don't. Because I'm a woman. It means that I don't know anything and I'm just stood here, you know, to be a pretty face. And, you know, honestly, that became an issue too, because sometimes I'd dress myself down and I down myself, downplay myself, because I was conscious that people would just look at me, you know, and I'm not saying, oh, look, I'm the, you know, most beautiful person in the world. It's just that people would look at me like I am tall. I'm 5'10". You know, I've got long hair and like, and some people would say attractive in some way. And that became a thing where then that's what people would talk about. And then that frustrated me because, you know, I'm very proud of myself now, but then these are the things that I used to do, like, because I would just, what I wanted people to take me seriously. But anyway, I could go on forever about that too, because things have changed so much and I'm so proud of the way we've changed and that women can play competitive sport, that women can speak about sport and be in a position where it is a profession as well. And women can be referees. Like that all happened like after I started my career. And I think it's just incredible, but it's changed so much. I can't even tell you. I could sit and tell you all day, telling you all these anecdotes of everything that I had to go through to be even taken seriously. But I'm so proud of myself that I did go on that journey. And I think it was very much influenced by my background in a way where I was like, this is something I'm passionate about. And I am going to prove that I deserve to have a voice in this. And I went on an absolute mission. And to start with, it was a bit of a chip on my shoulder. And also, to be honest, when I was in those environments with all those men, I was like, oh, well, I've seen you all before, because I was raised with a narcissist. So whatever, do your worst to me. That's what it was a bit like, because I was like, whatever you do to me, whatever you say to me is nowhere near as bad what I was raised in. So, I know that sounds probably a little bit, you know, but that was the case. But then I changed that, because that became very unhealthy to me, because I allowed myself to be bullied and I was fine with it because I was used to it. But then I started to change things, and then I found my voice. And when I got in a position where I could say no, I would stick up for myself. But the one thing I want to say, just to wrap this bit up, is that it's very hard. It was very hard at the time to stand up to these people, because even when I started to find my voice and I became, you know, this presenter that had a name that people respected, even then it was hard to find my voice to these people, because these people have so much power and they control your career, right? So there's times where I did stick up for myself and I got taken off shows. Like, can you believe that? I got taken off certain shows because I did say no. Because also there was a lot of sexual harassment at the time. And when you do say no, they do try and ruin your career, or they'll take you off shows. They'll, you know, yeah, not put you on things. And I think what I want to say about that is it's so hard sometimes in those situations where there's a lot of power to say no and to find your voice and to stick up for yourself amongst those people, because definitely in my day, sounds so old, but it was a boys club. It was a boys club, and they could shut you down in seconds.
So you're basically saying you've got personal experience of the kind of the worst of the Me Too movement, really?
Oh, 10 times over.
Wow.
10 times over. 10 times over. Yeah.
And how did you get out of that? Like, when you went through some of those times where you were punished for sticking up for yourself and saying no, how did you get through those times?
I mean, I remember a time where I was absolutely I'm being slightly careful what I say. And even now, how ridiculous that I'm careful what I say. I mean, I shouldn't have to be careful what I say about somebody that's done something horrifically wrong. I remember being absolutely stripped, like you wouldn't believe, by somebody, by a head of a network in an office. I was like given a good one. I was literally like shouted at, pointed in my face, like literally destroyed in an office because I'd spoken out about domestic abuse and I'd been, ironically, and I'd been on a news show and I was stripped a good one the next day. And like, who do you think you are? Nobody gives a what you think, like, wow. You know, get in your box, look pretty and talk about.
Because they felt that what you said was bad for the image of the show that you were presenting.
I have no idea what they thought. How can you get in these people's head? I think they felt it was a threat because I was getting attention for that, really good attention. You know, I was in the newspaper the next day talking about how authentic I was and, you know, the newspaper was thrown at me. So I think it's a threat, right? This person used to call me the Enigma. That was my nickname. How funny is that? It's not funny, but I was called the Enigma because they couldn't quite work me out and they couldn't quite break me because the job, they broke people and made people cry. And then they felt in power, right? And that they wouldn't leave. It's all about fear. It's a very similar mechanism in domestic abuse, right? If you break that person down, they'll never leave. Wow. So, and you'll be able to control them. But how I coped with it is your question. I remember that day, like going to the toilets and just crying and crying. And then I had to go on air for 5 hours. But I think I was like so determined not to let these people beat me down and to show them who I was. And I was still discovering who I was myself to myself, you know?
And you're Christian at this point.
I don't even know how to answer that because I probably wouldn't have called myself a Christian, but I feel like I definitely had something inside me that I've always felt, which I feel was a strength and a knowing that I deserved somewhere deep inside. And I think that came from faith and from God. I always felt like a presence, but I wouldn't have called myself a Christian. So if you'd have asked me then, I probably would have said no. But I'd have said no, being like, oh, but then I feel like I've got this little bit of faith. But no, you know.
Still fighting it.
yeah, so fighting it. But I think like how I got through it was, I want to be honest that it was also hard. It wasn't like I was just like, fine, you know, like I was very, very hardened. And actually that's something I've changed because I was almost too hardened where I detached a lot. And by detaching, it's actually an unhealthy behavior. It's a coping mechanism in survival. So it's amazing at surviving. Like that, I'm so proud of myself and the things that I did to survive. They're automatic coping mechanisms. But when you detach like that and you become hardened, it also prevents love from coming in and it prevents all the amazing stuff. So that's something that I've really spent the last 10 years working on because I had such a strong shell that it actually made me quite depressed and quite lonely and quite isolated because I had such a strong shell. So on the outside, but my heart was breaking on the inside. And so, but how I worked through that was just a real resolve and a real belief that I was meant to be there. And even if I didn't believe it, I'd tell myself that I was and so determined to not let those people win. But then I also like coped with it by over-exercising. So not the healthiest coping mechanism, but I did. Not the worst either. So I that would help me mentally. And also I think really, really knowing that of what I wanted to achieve. So I knew what I wanted to achieve and I was so determined to achieve that and nobody was going to stop me. So keeping hold of like why I was doing this in the first place, who I was representing, what I was representing and yeah, why am I sat there on TV? Why am I walking in that studio every day? So I think that really helped me. And knowing that where I was wanting to go. So I knew where I, at the time, I really was like, right, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to go there, and then I'm going to build this. So I didn't know where I was going, and I think that really helped me. Yeah, and friends as well helped me. Yeah, and just knowing that, I feel like I was, at the time, I was representing a lot of, you know, women and girls and voices that were quietened, and I wanted to show that we shouldn't be quietened. So yeah, it's a hard answer, you know, it's a hard answer, because I'm not going to go, oh, well, I coped this way and everything was fine.
Yeah.
Because it definitely was a journey to go through that. But then I think as I got more confident and realized my self-worth, and also got good feedback, you know, it was also good, like, you know, I got opportunities and people liked me, and I, you know, I got more opportunities, then it's more like, oh, well, I am worthy of being here, and this person is a bully, you know, and switching it, and I'm the one that's worth something, this person's a bully and needs power over people. So it's also like understanding the narrative, because the narrative that these people give us makes us feel like it's our fault. And it's us that aren't good enough, but actually turning it and be like, no, they're the people that aren't enough. And that's why they have to do that and quieten, you know, people they see that they have power over.
Well, outside of all of the things that you've achieved in sports broadcasting, you now have hosted award-winning true crime podcasts and completed more feats of endurance than I could possibly... I mean, I could tell everybody what you have done, but I'm going to have to let them go look it up on the internet. Otherwise, that would take the whole hour, of, you know, as well as cycling from Rio to London. Guys, that's just the first of it. If you want to know more, Google her. It's all on Wikipedia. It comes across really clearly talking to you that you are incredibly passionate and very driven, and that probably no small part of that comes from some of the things that you experienced in your life. And you've also alluded to the fact that at times that, you know, you haven't always handled that in the healthiest way. What impact did it make when you found faith eventually? And how does that affect how you work today and the projects you take on, the choices you make, you know, the things that you do in the media? How easy is it for you to express your Christian faith in your work world? How do you balance all of that stuff?
So I'll answer the first one in terms of like impact. I think it's had a huge impact, and a lot of that was also to do with what happened to me in Rio. I was about to say Rio because I always call it Rio, but I'm conscious that not everybody might know what I'm talking about. I'm always like, when Rio happened, it's almost like a pre-Rio and a post-Rio life.
Yeah.
So Rio was, I was hospitalized in Rio. That's where I ended up in a coma and fighting for my life on life support. And that really stripped me down and to the rawest of where nothing else mattered, right? Nothing, because all that mattered was living and the people that I love. And that really had such an impact on me. And God was part of that, because I have like a tattoo on the back of my left calf, which is an angel. And I really believe that that angel was with me. And I saw that angel, like I got somebody to design it from my head, because I believe that the angel was with me. And I believe that God was there and, you know, and gave me that choice. I mean, people might not like me saying that, but like, I really felt that at one point I was so exhausted and I was in so much physical pain, but I was also exhausted from like life and constantly fighting, and I'd had enough only for a split second. And then I saw my mom and I saw all the people I love and I saw this angel and I saw God, and I was like I haven't finished, I'm definitely meant to be here. And so that's really influenced me in terms of having faith and being a Christian. And feeling like God is with me gives me safety. I never had safety. And I feel like no matter what, that I'm going to be okay. It gives me, I feel like, I don't know the verse because I'm not great at this, so sorry. Maybe you'll know it, but there's...
Probably not.
There's a verse in the Bible. I remember when I first went to HTV, by the way, quick story. And we used to turn to page in the Bible. And I said to one of the pastors, I was like, can you please give the page number? Because I've got no idea what you're on about. Because I was like, I'm sat there trying to find it and really embarrassed, because they're like, I don't know. And I was like, just give me the page number because I have no idea where I'm looking. Like, I don't know it that well, but I do. But I know it in my heart, but I just don't know it.
I want to.
Where things are. Yeah. Anyway, there's a verse. Like, sorry, your listeners will be like, I know what I know the verse. How come she doesn't know what verse it is? But it's to do with basically having a voice for people that don't have a voice and to serve. And to me, I feel like that's why I'm here. Mm. And that's something I've like really battled with, because I felt like I've always been the caretaker, right? When I was younger, I looked after everybody, and I was the parent when I was younger in my parent relationship. I was the parent. I parented myself, I parented my brothers, I parented my mum. And so, but then I really feel that I've now turned that into a healthy thing where it's like, I'm here to serve and I'm here to be a voice for people that, and hold space for people, not just be a voice. Like, it's not just about my voice. It's about holding space for people. And so that's really important to me. And that's something that I knew early on, but I've cemented it and really kind of like come at one to know that that's what my purpose is. And I think that's really powerful. And that is how I live my day-to-day life. And that is 100% influenced by my faith. And also, you know, I have to say, because I'm a really honest, transparent person, I think it's so important, is that like I've been through a few tough times over the last 2 years to do with fertility. Mm. And that's been so hard for me, so hard for me. And it's really made me like angry sometimes. And I've definitely had times where I've just prayed and I've just been like, I don't understand why you're not help, you know, why aren't you with me on this? Like, you know, and I'm sure there's some women out there that can relate to this. And that's really conflicting sometimes, because you're like, I deserve to have this. And I've got so much to give. This is what I kept saying to myself. Like, I have so much to give. I don't understand. Like, you know, and it's brought up a lot of past stuff for me too, is in like, you know, the decisions I've made, but I wouldn't change it now, but that's definitely made me question things. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, that's my real faith in my foundation has never wavered, because I believe I'm meant to be here and this is a position I'm meant to be in, and let's see what happens with that. But I just wanted to say that, like, it's not, I think sometimes there are things where I've been, you know, I've prayed so many times and I'm like, you know, are you not listening to me? Are you not with me? You know, I've given everything to try and do that, but it can still happen, you know, but I just wanted to say that it's not like I've kind of gone through these times when I was younger and then everything's fine. Right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, having faith and all the journey I've gone through really helps me now deal with things in life, because we're not going to just, you know, life isn't just going to be roses all the time. There's always going to be things, I'm sure, in your life in the future and my life in the future, but it's all about having that assuredness in where you are and who you are. And that's how I feel now. So I, no matter what, and I do have wobbles and things do happen, but I do feel like very assured in who I am and in my faith. And so that's a huge impact. So I'd say safety and assuredness and purpose.
Wow, that's a really beautiful answer, Charlie, and thank you so much for being so honest and vulnerable with us. I was literally interviewing an American author yesterday who wrote a book about her own journey through miscarriage, and she was talking about exactly the same thing, like that feeling of anger when things don't go wrong. And it doesn't have to be baby loss, it can be all sorts of, you know, the other experiences you had. You could have come out of that going, why did abuse have to happen to me? What, you know, some of these things don't make sense, do they? And it's really hard sometimes, I think, within Christian spaces to not just gloss over all of that and say, oh, it's okay now, we found Jesus, everything's going to be fine, but to instead be able to sit with the uncomfortableness of,
yeah,
life is not always rosy, but God is still there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think safety is such a big thing in our life. Mm-hmm. And I think we can take a lot of safety from just sitting in that moment and be like, you know, and just knowing that we're going to be okay. And even though it's horrifically hard, like I had a miscarriage too, and I was absolutely heartbroken, and I'm just like, I can't understand why this would happen, and I've gone through all these things, and like, and it's just another thing, and you know, that was going through my head. It's like, how much trauma can one person cope with? But at the same time, you know, I feel like, I'm not going to say I feel like I grow from it, because that's such a bore, because it's like, that's just, you know, that's not, that shouldn't have happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, and it shouldn't happen to any women. And it's like really awful. But at the same time, you know, yeah, I think that you need to lean on your faith in those moments and lean on the strength. And also, yeah, you don't have to, I don't like that glossing over thing, because it's not the reality. And that's not faith to me, that's pretend. Sorry, that's quite strong, but that's how I feel.
yeah, 100%. And in true honesty, I don't know where these Bible verses come from either, but they are some of my favourites. There's a bit in the New Testament that says that we get to comfort others with the comfort that we ourselves have received from God. And that's a verse that means a lot to me when I think about some of the things that I've been through in my life. It seems unbelievable when you say things like, I don't know how much more trauma do I have to take? And yet to see the strength in your life and the passion that you have for the causes that you campaign on, to know that you are doing that, you are offering comfort to others who have been comforted through the comfort that you've received from Christ. And that sort of picture of, you know, that circular picture that generates in my mind always brings me a lot of comfort.
Yeah, me too. I'm just trying to look for what I'm talking about. So it's Proverbs: speak out for those who cannot speak, for the rights of all the destitute. Speak out, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and needy.
Yeah, I think some translations do render it being a voice for the voiceless. And I think
yes, that's the one I've read.
It's a really nice translation, isn't it? Yeah. And you can see that so clearly in the campaign work that you do, and even before you were a Christian, and now I guess maybe it has a different or an added emphasis that you get to use the platform and the creativity and the talents that God's given you to tell those stories as well as all of the other stories that you get to tell. Well, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you today and to hear more about your story. And I can't wait to see what you're going to do next. Do you have any big projects coming up that you want to tell us about?
I do. but unfortunately, the way this business works is I feel like I'm just like constantly like some secret agent. You can't ever talk about anything until it's announced. So you spend ages like working on something that you can't say. So sometimes you'll see my social media posts are like so like... like, I am doing something again. I'm stood behind, you know, so right now, unfortunately, I mean, I can tell you, like, if you haven't, I've just released a show on Apple and it's called Unicorn Girl. I'm so proud of it. And I'm so proud of all the people that were part of that. It was so complicated to make and took such deep investigation, but I think a really powerful story. It's about a woman who's part of a book group. She basically starts this nonprofit called Exodus, and you know, she was married at the time, she gets divorced, she's got two kids, and she's a single mom that wants to change the world. She creates this nonprofit, and she ends up becoming the CEO and a multi-million dollar founder and having such impact, changing the world, going to Ukraine, Afghanistan, partnering with Homeland Security. Except, is it real? Is she good? Is she bad? Is she doing good? And you'll find out if you listen to it. And there's more to come. That's all I can say right now. But it's a really powerful story about female friendships, about trauma as well, and about narcissism and manipulative behavior amongst women. It was such an incredible privilege to make that and to investigate that story and to put it out into the world. But I can't, unfortunately, tell you about everything that's coming up.
Well, people will have to follow you on socials and keep their ears to the ground. And then I'm sure more exciting projects will be following shortly. But thank you so much, Charlie, for being with us today. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Huge news, Wayfair shoppers. There's still time to shop Wayfair's Cyber Week sale. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. Plus, with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping, everything home comes right to your home, just in time for the holidays. So don't wait. Save up to 70% off during Wayfair's Cyber Week sale. Now through December 7th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Before the rush takes over, start your Christmas journey with Premier's Advent Moments interactive calendar. Open each door and step into the unfolding story of Jesus with daily challenges rooted in kindness and a verse that brings you closer to Bethlehem. You'll also receive short emails of encouragement to help you stay centered through Advent. Sign up at premier.org.uk/advent2025. Brought to you by Sat7 UK.